Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point, a big weekend for the presidential candidates, with evangelicals, labor, and Latinos all weighing in. And while Latinos spoke largely with one voice, favoring Hillary Clinton 3-1 in Nevada, labor struggled to walk in lockstep, and South Carolina's evangelicals agreed on little more than the party they favored. This hour on Point, we'll talk with the players, voices of Christian conservatism, labor, and the Latino West on their choices in Campaign 08. Joining me now from Rice University in Houston, Texas, is Earl Black, a great interpreter of Southern politics and author of the new book, Divided America, The Ferocious Power Struggle in American Politics. Earl Black, welcome back to On Point. Good to have you.
Glad to be here, Tom.
And with us from Columbia, South Carolina, is Orrin Smith, president of the Palmetto Family Council, a prominent Christian conservative group associated with the national Christian right group Focus on the Family. The Palmetto Family Council did not endorse a Republican candidate, and Baptist preacher Mike Huckabee did not win the top spot in South Carolina. Orrin Smith, thank you very much for being with us today.
Hello, Tom. Good to be here.
So we know that you all were divided enough among yourselves that you did not endorse going in. So how do you interpret these results coming out and the role that evangelicals, conservative evangelicals in South Carolina did or did not play here, Mr. Smith?
Well, let me quote someone who may be surprising for me to quote, and that's H.L. Mencken. You know, H.L. Mencken said if you toss an egg out of a Pullman window, you're likely to hit a fundamentalist somewhere in America. That's really the case with South Carolina when it comes to evangelicals. There are so many evangelicals here, and I've been arguing that it's much higher percentage than it's been reported. And like anything else, when you have a large quantity or a high percentage of something, you have a great deal of diversity. So the evangelical vote, if there is such a thing really as a separate group here, is very diverse.
But John McCain came in first, he who called some very prominent evangelicals agents of influence some years ago. And Mike Huckabee, on the other hand, who said in his ads in South Carolina just last week, you know, my faith doesn't just influence me, it defines me. You can't go a lot further than that, but still he's in the number two spot. Why?
Well, I think because a lot of things have changed here since 2000. You know, 1999 and 2000 were very ugly periods, ugly years for John McCain and evangelicals in South Carolina, particularly the fundamentalist evangelicals.
Agents of intolerance, I should have said, of course.
Right, agents of intolerance. But some things have changed. I mean, John McCain since then made a speech at Liberty University. He was the commencement speaker there and received an honorary degree, and also he's had a number of meetings. When we were working here in South Carolina to pass an amendment to our state constitution that would define marriage as between one man and one woman, John McCain came here and campaigned for it, and he had held meetings for us and helped us organize some ministers around that effort, and a great deal of conversations took place during that time that were very frank and open. And he got to know a lot of his detractors, and they got to know him very well as a part of that effort.
Earl Black, Orrin Smith says, look, yes, there are a lot of evangelicals here and many conservatives among them, but they're diverse like anybody else. Don't be surprised if they split between these candidates. What do you make, though, of the many directions in which their vote appears to have fallen in South Carolina and what it portends for the South's role in this Republican nominating process and the general election?
Well, in general, for the last 20, 25 years, South Carolina Republican primary has been very important. Ronald Reagan used it for his really breakthrough primary in 1980. George Herbert Walker Bush did it in 1988, and then George Bush did it in 2000. Now, all of those winning candidates were people who sought the support of evangelicals, but that's not where they started. They started with economic conservatives, country club Republicans, and then they sought to build a coalition that would bring in a lot of the evangelicals, but usually doing it not as the centerpiece. In 1988, for example, it was in South Carolina that George W. Bush defeated not only Robert Dole, but also Pat Robertson, who was the Mike Huckabee of the day, as it were, and did that very, very decisively. So the evangelicals have been part of successful Republican coalitions, but the Republicans have never really sought to make them centerpiece. They have wanted the evangelicals on the bus, but not driving the bus.
Orrin Smith, then take us in to the grain of who's breaking for whom within your diverse Christian conservative community. Then what? Even I think on even on the board of your Palmetto Family Council, there was nothing like unanimity. You've looked out more broadly. What sort of evangelicals are breaking for whom in this Republican contest?
Well, I have a little theory about that that maybe I'd like to test with Professor Black, and
great.
That is when issues such as the moral and the ethical and the social issues, when the candidates, and I leave out Rudy Giuliani here, but when the candidates tend to basically agree about that, and I think they did, Huckabee, Romney, Thompson, Paul, McCain, Duncan Hunter, they all had basically the same position on the social issues. So if you're a social issues voter or a moral issue voter, values voter, and you're trying to decide who to vote for, if all of that is level, then perhaps you choose on the basis of something else. And I think that makes the typical evangelical voter in South Carolina more like everyone else. For instance, in one of the exit polls, when they asked, should abortion be illegal or illegal, those who said abortion should be illegal, Huckabee got 35% and McCain got 26. He was only 9 points behind. So I think there was more going on than the moral issues with the values voters.
And yet here is Mike Huckabee, Minister Mike Huckabee, ordained Baptist, Southern Baptist preacher, standing in front of your state and saying, "Come, this defines me." Is that not...
Well, you have to take a look at maybe Dr. Bob Jones III, who is president of Bob Jones University in Greenville. He endorsed Mitt Romney, and my feeling is part of the reason he did that, and I think he said as much, was, I already have a preacher. I need a president. I need someone who is going to be political, someone who can win the nomination. So there was a mixture of pragmatism and purity, frankly, going on in the fundamentalist and evangelical communities.
Earl Black, Mike Huckabee tried it from another angle. He urged South Carolinians to, quote, support a Southerner who has run a Southern state. He played his Southern card as well. That also didn't put him in the top spot. How do you interpret the McCain-Huckabee lineup here in the Carolina results, Earl Black?
Well, I think part of it is that as South Carolina has become more diverse over the past 25 years or so, John McCain back in 2000, and I would think continuing over the weekend, found a lot of his support in the coastal areas of South Carolina that have had a lot of in-migration, and many of the people who are there are not nearly as conservative on a broad range of issues as South Carolinians in the upcountry, in the Greenville area, and elsewhere in the state. I was really struck by the nature of Huckabee's support in South Carolina. He did a lot better than Pat Robertson did in 1988, but at least according to the exit poll, he got 30% of the vote in the Republican primary, lost by 3 points to John McCain. But his majority support, the only demographic group that gave him a clear majority of the vote, were the category of people who attended church more than weekly. Mm. That was 31% of the electorate in South Carolina in that primary, and Huckabee won 52% of that. That's one of the very few demographic categories where he really defeated John McCain. He had almost a 30-point advantage over McCain among that very limited group of voters. Well, that's the type of profile that the Republicans in South Carolina, who think not just about what happens in South Carolina, but about trying to nominate a Republican candidate who'd have a chance to be competitive in the general election, that's where they would see Huckabee as a non-starter. If you look at the Electoral College map, it's really hard to think of a state that Mike Huckabee, if he were the Republican nominee, which he's not going to be, could carry that the Republicans haven't been carrying in the past. And you can think of a lot of states where the Republicans have had success in the last presidential elections, where if the Republicans led with a preacher like Mike Huckabee, they're going to lose those states as well. So he would have been Electoral College disaster for the Republicans if he ever wound up as the nominee.
Orrin Smith, what about the enthusiasm level then for other candidates? Let's take John McCain. Did you feel it strong enough in the run-up to this election and the primary voting on Saturday that it looks as though Christian conservatives as a group, if you can look at them that way, once we get to the general election, are going to be fired up in this campaign, fired up enough to come out and make the kind of difference they're credited with making in 2004?
Well, I think evangelical voters have a well-deserved reputation for the most part of coming out and voting in the general elections. Sometimes conservatives who are more on the economic tax side, fiscal side, may come and go on certain issues, but your values voters tend to be pretty hardcore about turning out and giving it one for the party. And I think if John McCain can continue to tap into that, which really he really has begun to build those bridges, if that can continue, I think, for one thing, there's, I think, a great deal of support for winning this war and winning this war on terror. And John McCain made that a centerpiece of his campaign here. He went from VFW post to VFW post campaigning, and that turned his campaign around. After the Petraeus report came out, he really moved along and started to bump up in the polls with everyone.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking directly this hour with players from the weekend presidential votes, voices of Christian conservatism, labor, and the Latino West. Here's John McCain celebrating his win in South Carolina.
Thank you, South Carolina, for bringing us across the finish line first in the first in the South primary. You know, it took us a while, but what's 8 years among friends, huh?
8 years indeed, and here's Mike Huckabee saying it's not over till it's over.
This is not an event. It is a process. And the process is far, far from over.
Earl Black joins us from Rice University in Houston, Texas. His book coming out soon is Divided America, big political interpreter there. Orrin Smith is with us, president of the Palmetto Family Council, associated with Focus on the Family, Christian right group, very active nationally. Earl Black, I want to get you here on this conservative Christian front and what it means. If it's not Huckabee out front, if it is McCain or, for that matter, Mormon Mitt Romney, Orrin Smith is confident that it will still be a large voice in the general election. Are you as confident? And do you see any cracks in the solid South this year if it's not?
Well, I think that right now, certainly Huckabee is the most prominent voice of the fundamentalist Christians. And his failure to win South Carolina means that really he doesn't have anywhere to go. I'd be very surprised if he got anything close to 30% in Florida. I think it'll be much, much lower than that. So I think his campaign is pretty much over. The Republicans who have succeeded in recent times are those who have put together a coalition of economic conservatives and social conservatives. That's a little harder to do. Probably a lot harder to do now because of the unpopularity of the Bush administration nationally. On the other hand, what may help unite the Republicans in the fall would be the candidacy of Hillary Clinton on the Democratic side. Her negatives are very high, and of course they're especially high in many of the southern states. And so usually voting is a combination of who do you like and who do you dislike, and the Republicans will be much more dependent this year on who do you not like as a mobilizing force. They remain very much, I would say, an underdog in the general election in the fall.
They being?
The Republicans, the Republican conservatives.
And in the South as well, does the South look like a firm GOP stronghold in the general election or not this time?
Oh, I think it probably does, especially since when we get to the fall, the Democratic candidate, whether it's Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama, and I think it's much more likely to be Hillary Clinton, are going to be people who will help to reunite the Republicans. That, I think, will be a prominent feature of any campaigns to go. And if the Republicans come up with a nominee who can emphasize war on terror, national security issues, things of that sort, that would be also what they would need to help reunify the party.
Now, Earl Black, there was this element, is this element, in Mike Huckabee's campaign of economic populism, of empathy for a middle class that he describes as struggling, and many people have responded to that. Does that, to your mind, indicate some vulnerability or potential inroads for, if not a Democratic challenger, then at least less enthusiasm for a GOP candidate, or not?
Well, that would be part of Huckabee's appeal that I think would not be terribly widely known, and I don't think would have much appeal at all on the Republican side. You know, on the Democratic side, the difficulty that John Edwards has had in trying to present a more of a populist appeal there, you know, suggests that's really very difficult to execute, because it makes it difficult on each side to pursue policies of economic development and expansion of the middle class. It goes back to a time when America didn't have a middle class, which is which was the case in the Great Depression, but is not the case today.
Let's hear from some listeners south of the Mason-Dixon. David's calling from Nashville, Tennessee. David, you're on the air.
Thank you. I just wanted to comment on Mike Huckabee that I think it's kind of unfortunate that people have emphasized so much his being a Baptist preacher. You know, he was governor of Arkansas for 10.5 years, and that's quite a bit of executive experience. So he's not just like somebody like Pat Robertson showing up and, you know, saying, here I am, vote for me just because I'm a Christian conservative.
But on the other hand, in South Carolina in particular, it was his commercial in the run-up to the election that said, faith doesn't just influence me, it defines me. I mean, he wrapped himself around that poll pretty hard, David.
Yeah, I think that it's something that affects a lot of his viewpoints and decisions. But I would say he's got a lot broader experience than, you know, just being a preacher. He was governor for a long time.
Yes, and for a long time, without question. Orrin Smith, Earl Black is pretty gloomy about Huckabee's prospects, it sounds to me, even before South Carolina voted. Do you see that kind of calculus having gone into many voters' decisions in South Carolina? After all, Huckabee, I mean, it was far from a disastrous showing. He did pull a lot of votes there, but was there a significant body of people saying he just can't make it in the general, so we can't go there with Mike?
Well, Tom, I think this is something that related to something Huckabee did that I don't think I've ever seen in a Republican primary. You know, the way that the South became Republican is when the working class whites moved from the Democrats over to the Republican Party, and then the Republicans were able to unify both middle to upper class whites and working class, more blue collar whites, to have a majority. Huckabee here appealed a great deal to, the statement he made. He said, I want to be like the guy that you work with, not like the guy that fired you.
Yeah.
I can't think of a Republican campaign for any office in South Carolina that was ever directed primarily at the blue-collar white vote. I don't know if Dr. Black's seen that anywhere, but I don't think I've ever seen it before.
You're right, Orrin. I don't think that is something that would be a very novel approach. And it's one that runs counter to, in general, the way the Republicans favor economic development and the role of leadership in doing that. So that would have been part of the uniqueness of Huckabee. But the bigger picture for Huckabee is Republicans just barely won the last two presidential elections. If you look at the Electoral College in detail, which we do in our book, Divided America, then the part of the problem for the Republicans has been that the religious conservatism has helped them in the South, but it has really hurt them in areas like the Northeast and the Pacific Coast and some parts of the upper Midwest. And so when you put someone like Huckabee as the centerpiece of the party, that's just a non-starter in very many areas of the country, and it doesn't give the Republicans any attempt, any real possibility at all of improving their Electoral College performance over the last two elections.
Orrin Smith, of course, that line of Huckabee's was aimed, it was seen as aimed primarily at Mitt Romney, who did not do so well in South Carolina, but took Michigan now, and Nevada, though that wasn't really contested, he got that too. Do you see Christian conservatives in your neck of the woods prepared, if it comes to it, to line up behind Mitt Romney enthusiastically in the general election?
Well, you know, having read my Earl and Merle Black and my V.O. Key, I'm amazed at how much of this goes back to some of those ideas and those theories that have been proven over time. And one is the whole idea of a silk stocking district. You know, evangelicals in South Carolina have changed in their economic standing over time. The average evangelical here is wealthier than in the last generation. And I think evangelicals, like everyone else, want to be considered to be upper middle class, maybe want to join a country club, which would be unbelievable. And those type of voters don't necessarily want to vote for someone who they might consider to be more of a blue-collar candidate. So my thinking was Huckabee had that vote. He already had that coming into South Carolina. And if he had emphasized some other issues that might have attracted some of those voters away from Romney or away from McCain, then he might have done a little better here. It was all about where you want to be economically and where you want your standing to be. I think, and that affects everyone, no matter what their religious beliefs.
So you've got the economy out front there. Romney may stand for that, and yet he was deep back in the pack in South Carolina. Earl Black, we've just got another minute here with you. Who do you see as the stronger Southern candidate, John McCain or Mitt Romney?
The Republicans do not have at this moment anyone who really looks strong intrinsically running for president. All the national polling gives the Democrats a substantial lead there. But what the Republicans need more than anything else is a leader of the party who comes from beyond the South. Running candidates from the South does not help the Republicans at all. That's their strongest region. What they need to do is find a candidate who puts a different face, a different sectional face on the Republican Party, and that's where people like McCain or Romney, and much less likely now, Mayor Rudolph Giuliani of New York City, those would be the strong calling cards of people like that, people like Ronald Reagan, outside of the main regional strongholds of the Republican Party, whose breadth is much wider than just the South and the Mountain Plains.
And finally, Earl Black, I hear you just about writing Huckabee's obit today. What about Fred Thompson? I mean, Huckabee got 30%. Fred Thompson was in there, too, on his home southern turf, and 16% of the vote in South
Carolina. I don't think Fred Thompson is going anywhere. He doesn't really have any money or an organization, and he may still stay in for Florida, but I don't see him really doing well. It's McCain, Romney, perhaps Giuliani, if he does well in Florida. Those would be the three that I would expect to be standing, and maybe not even Giuliani, after the Florida primary on the 29th.
Look for Earl Black's new book, Divided America, The Ferocious Power Struggle in American Politics, out soon. Dr. Black at Rice University in Houston, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom.
And Orrin Smith, president of the Palmetto Family Council in Columbia, South Carolina. We hope to check in with you again. Thanks very much for joining us, Orrin.
Great. Enjoyed it. Thank you, Tom.
I want to swing out to Nevada now. A whole different set of issues and dynamics there. Joining us from Reno, Nevada, Anjanette Damon. She's chief political reporter for the Reno Gazette Journal. Her blog is Inside Nevada Politics. Anjanette, thanks very much for being here.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
And in Las Vegas, Nevada, Mo Dennis, second-term assemblyman representing the 28th District in northeast Las Vegas, the largest Hispanic assembly district in the state, about 60,000 people there. Mo Dennis, thank you very much for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Good to be with you.
Anjanette, let's just speak first to the labor issue. The Culinary Union was very clear and strong, and not just the Culinary Union, for Barack Obama. He did not take the top vote position here, though he got the most delegates out of Nevada. How do you interpret that? Labor weakness, Hillary strength? What do you say, Anjanette?
Well, it's a little bit of both, probably, as we're starting to analyze this in the days following the results on Saturday. The Culinary Union's been a very powerful force in state and regional politics and in southern Nevada, but they got into the presidential race a little bit late. They kept putting off the endorsement. They wanted to be have a joint endorsement with their parent organization, Unite Here, and so they got into the game with the Service Employees International Union a little bit late, right after New Hampshire. So that gave them just a little bit more than a week to really try and drive their membership to the caucuses in support of Senator Obama. They appeared to have a tough job ahead of them because their membership was largely already with Senator Clinton.
So maybe just not enough time, but also some loyalties right there already set in. Mo Dennis, what about this Latino turnout for Hillary Clinton? I'm reading some results here saying Latinos in Nevada 3-1 for Hillary Clinton. You endorsed Barack Obama. You're Latino with a big voice and presence in that community. How do you interpret the outcome?
Well, I think it depends on what the message is that, you know, people are looking for. You know, with Obama, you know, he's got the message of change. You know, do we want to change America? Hillary talked about experience and other things. I think for the Latino community, you know, we were, you know, out working hard, and I don't know exactly what the numbers ended up being because I haven't seen those yet over the weekend, but I know that 15% out of the 120,000, 116,000 that turned out, which was huge for us, you know, our main thing originally was to get, you know, get the vote out for the Latino community, which, you know, we were able to do, and the party worked hard on that, and the campaigns were all working hard on that. It'll be interesting to see what the, you know, final numbers are on that.
But if she did that well with Latinos and Latinas in Nevada, what do you think that portends for contests across the country? Do you think the Nevada Latino vote is representative? Is this a big problem for Barack Obama? Is it a big plus as we go toward California and more for Hillary Clinton?
Well, I don't know. I think, you know, in Iowa, it was split 50-50. Here, there was a lot of emphasis. I don't know how much they put on in Iowa, but there was a lot of emphasis here. You know, the Hillary campaign, you know, was very aggressive in that. I don't know. I think that Barack's message is just starting to get to the Latino community, and as we go, I think it'll increase as people realize what his true message is.
And which part of his message do you think might work? If it was change versus experience, if that's how it seemed to boil down to you, is the change message for some reason not resonating with Nevada Latinos?
No, I think probably one that, you know, the Clinton campaign has been good talking about her stance on immigration and that, but in actuality, Obama's always been there on the immigration reform and on those types of issues, and I think we just need to keep hammering that, and I think as people understand that he's always been there on that issue and he hasn't flip-flopped on any of the immigration issues, I think that Latinos will, you know, tend to come towards Obama. At the same time, the Latino community is not all solid in what they believe, and so you're going to see some differences, so that's why it's good to have a choice between the two.
And Jeanette, how do you read the Latino turnout for Hillary in Nevada? What's your interpretation?
Well, I think Assemblyman Dennis is right that the Hispanic vote is not usually monolithic. However, Senator Clinton has very strong inroads into that community in Nevada, and polls indicate also in California. Her name recognition is very high, and the community has known her for a long time. She also worked very hard to get that vote in Nevada, doing many Spanish language interviews. So I think that you could see that the vote here is a reflection of how the vote will go across the rest of the country unless Senator Obama can really start appealing with a message.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking at players in this weekend's voting in South Carolina and now Nevada. Labor came out big in the Culinary Union for Barack Obama, but he came in just behind in the caucus voting there, Hillary Clinton. Latinos, very strong for Hillary Clinton in Nevada, and that will be an important voting block in many states upcoming, not least California on February 5th. We've been joined from Reno, Nevada, by Anjanette Damon. She's chief political reporter for the Reno Gazette Journal. And from Las Vegas, by Assemblyman Mo Dennis, represents a heavily Hispanic district there in northeast Las Vegas. Here's Hillary Clinton in her speech celebrating her win in Nevada.
I just want to say how grateful I am to Nevada and all of the people who worked so hard in this campaign. I guess this is how the West was won.
How the West was won. It's not as though Obama didn't try. Here's just a little bit from a campaign of his that ran in Nevada in Spanish.
Soy Barack Obama. Yo apruebo este mensaje.
Pagado por Obama for America.
Yo soy Barack Obama, but the vote, looks like, went the other way. Well, Dennis, take us in a little more deeply here. I mean, what is the conversation you're hearing among Latinos? The competition, for example, for your support was very fierce. I heard that just within minutes of Mr. Richardson pulling out of the race, people were on your telephone twisting your arm to get your support. What's the wider conversation sound like?
Well, you know, we have not very many of us. There's actually only two of us in the state assembly that are Hispanic Latinos, and so you know, our support was a big thing that they were looking for. Interestingly enough, you know, while Clinton courted a lot, Obama, you know, his emphasis was to work on the grassroots, to get out there, to meet the workers, and those kind of things. And so I kind of had to search him for him because I think it's important for the Latinos to have, you know, an option and in their voting. And I think as we talked about earlier, you know, he's coming in, some of these supports are coming in after Clinton's already got some commitments. And but I think as we move across the country, I think he will pick up some steam there because he does have a different message, and I think that message is going to be real important as people, you know, truly think about, well, who are we going to be able to elect in November, and you know, and working with the different communities, which is what we're trying to do here, is to work with the African American community, Asian American community, and I think as people hear that message, they tend to latch on to that.
But give us a sense. You're a politician there, right in the midst of a strong Latino community. What are the conversations that you hear, pro and con, on Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama among your constituents?
Well, I think many people, you know, they look at Clinton, and you know, and she talks about experience, and many of the Latinos have known her because, you know, of her husband and that. So, you know, her name is popular. Obama is, you know, the new kid on the block, and they don't know him as well. And some think that he doesn't have enough experience, and as you explain, you know, all the things that he's done, that he's actually worked in the Latino and African American community in Chicago, those kind of things. And then they tend to, you know, start to think differently when you start talking about that. And so, you know, I mean, Hillary is very strong because her name is well known in the Latino community. And in the past, that wasn't, you know, as big an issue because maybe they didn't turn out. But, you know, now they're starting to realize that, you know, that we have a voice, that we can come out and turn out and make a difference in the election.
Let's go to a call from Carlos calling from Boston. Hi, Carlos. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Hi. Well, thank you.
Good. Look, I'd like to make this discussion a little bit more serious and systematic.
Please.
First, the Republican recruitment in the last two presidential elections toward Latinos or Hispanic essentially has made them much more inclined to be Republicans than Democrats, and therefore this is the first election because of the tumultuous issue on the borders and the stereotyping of Latinos as Hispanic, that they've moved toward the Democratic column. But that's a lukewarm movement. It's not a serious or substantive movement in the contesting for Latino voters.
How does that explain the Hillary-Barack split of the vote in Nevada, or does it, Carlos?
Well, it does account for the 3-1 toward Hillary. But then again, there's another two issues that's related to this that's not being discussed. One, the problem of color inside the Latino community. Everyone of background, an African background, inside the Latino community,
yeah,
right, will tell you that the prejudice around color inside the Latino community affects that vote. And they're not ready yet to see Barack Obama as a full-fledged neutral candidate, that the racial factor influences that vote. And then finally, if you look at their media, Univision, Azteca, and all of their national television programs, it's all geared toward the whitening of the Latino as opposed to their sense as a third world people or a colored people inside the United States. And therefore, their propaganda leads to not yet to a full acceptance of the arguments and candidacy of a Barack Obama. None of these points are being raised by your analysts or even the newspaper.
Carlos, you've got it right here, right now. Stick with us. Mo Dennis in Las Vegas. Carlos raises the color factor in Latino voting and suggests that Latinos aren't ready to vote for somebody with Barack Obama's coloring. How do you see that?
Well, I can only go with what I see here in Nevada. And in Nevada, you know, we've been working together with the African American community and working on things together. While there is some of that from the past, I think that's changing here. And nationally, I'm just not sure.
But Carlos is saying the Latino media is actually sort of pushing that image of the pale Latino, the not third world. Has that pushed things away from someone like Obama?
Well, I don't. Like I said, in Iowa, I don't know if that's a good test of that or not. But you know, in the middle of the country, in Iowa, it was split 50-50, and here, you know, we have supporters for that. So. You know, once again, it comes back to the Latino community. You know, while some may have those prejudices, others don't and are more progressive.
And Jeanette Damon, what about our caller's observation that Republicans worked very hard to bring Latinos into their tent for a number of years, and then we had the big immigration debate and a lot of bad feeling about that? In Nevada, what about Latinos and how they break down on party lines? And have you seen that change?
Well, we're still trying to get a handle of how they're turning out in elections. And I think that the immigration issue will really start to play in the general election in terms of whether or not Democrats can peel Latinos back off away from the Republican Party because of the tone of the rhetoric on immigration coming from Republicans. If you look at the entrance polls in the Republican caucus versus the Democratic caucus in Nevada, the Republican caucus was not as well attended, although turnout did surprise. The entrance poll that I saw on the Republican side showed about 8% of Republicans caucusing on Saturday were of Hispanic descent. On the Democratic side, that was 15%. So there was a much greater involvement on the Democratic side by the Latino vote.
Let's get a call from Naugatuck, Connecticut. Lisa is on the line. Hi, Lisa. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just had a couple of different comments, actually. I'm an African-American, and originally I was supporting Hillary because from watching the debates at first, I thought that she had a lot more to say. But then it switched to Obama just because I liked his message, and I think, because I have a lot of Latino friends as well, that he is getting a lot of the vote, but I think a lot of the problem is, ever since the polls were wrong going into New Hampshire, you've seen the media kind of turn, and it seems like they are pushing Hillary more than they are Obama. And I think, I hate to say it, but unfortunately some Latinos aren't as educated as the whole political process, so they just kind of go with what they see on the news.
Ooh.
Without really being informed as to his stance on immigration and a whole lot of other issues that affect not only Latinos but minorities in general.
But you've moved the other way, Lisa, from Hillary to Obama. What about your Latina friends? Are they ready to go with you on that?
Oh, yeah, they're ready to go with me on that from the ones that I've talked to, most definitely. And I also think, too, it just seems that the Clintons are getting nasty about it, and I think that Bill Clinton's comment, especially about the fairy tale, they're treating him like he's not even a worthy opponent, like he's kind of a mosquito that's kind of a pest getting in their way.
Well, it's a mosquito who did pretty well in Nevada. He wasn't so far behind Hillary and came out of there with more delegates out of those caucuses. But Lisa, thanks for your call. I want to get a labor voice in here for a moment, if I may. Joining us from Las Vegas, Hillary Haycock. She's Nevada spokesperson for the SEIU, Service Employees International Union. You've got 17,500 members in Nevada in healthcare and public service. Also endorsed, like the Culinary Union, endorsed Barack Obama. Hillary Haycock, thanks for joining us.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
What happened? Your guy, the Culinary Union's guy, did not win. Why?
Well, he did get more delegates, as I believe you just mentioned. You know, it's very interesting. When we were out on caucus day, Hillary Clinton, you know, I got to give it to her. She really did her homework, and she put together quite the machine in Nevada. And I think that that's really, you know, what helped carry the day for her in terms of the popular vote. And I would have to say, you know, our union is a little different than the culinary union. I mean, culinary is, they're a major, you know, they really are the major player in...
huge on the Las Vegas Strip, of course.
Yeah, huge on the Las Vegas Strip. Our members were not sort of caught up in the controversy around the at-large caucuses.
And whether they should have those right down there on the Strip where people could walk away from their job for an hour or two and vote.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
That were, you know, contested by the local Democratic Party as well as another union, the teachers' union here in Nevada. So our members weren't really caught up in sort of the controversy that I think really hurt Culinary's ability to move their members out for the candidate they had endorsed. We saw amazing response from our membership, and we represent folks all across the state from Elko to Reno to Nevada, and we really do believe that our members did go out and caucus for Barack Obama, but, you know,
So the Culinary Union lost it, not your union, you say. Let me ask you, why did the SEIU in Nevada come out for Barack Obama? Because you think he's got the best positions on the issues, or because you thought he was the one to win?
It was a combination of the two. We looked really long and hard at all of the all of the candidates. We considered the top three, kind of as they'd been winnowed down by SEIU International. And the executive board overwhelmingly voted to endorse Barack Obama because they really felt like he was leading a movement for change in the country and that he really was the candidate who was going to be able to make it all the way through November 2008 and that he was going to be the president in January of next year who was actually going to be able to start solving the problems that this country faces, that working families every day face. We really just felt like he was the right candidate to get the job done.
Do you think other unions in other states are going to be more cautious now about endorsing Barack Obama because of what happened in Nevada, Hillary?
That's a very good question. I think that this is definitely still, I mean, it's a dogfight between Clinton and Obama at this point. And I think that a lot remains to be seen in terms of who's going to come out in support of either of them going forward, just because I think there's a lot of momentum on both sides, to be entirely honest.
Anjanette Damon, what do you think the forward path here can or should take from the outcome in Nevada? Barack Obama quite close and more delegates to Hillary, but Hillary taking that top spot and celebrating it vigorously there. What does it mean for the next contest here, and particularly Super Tuesday not far off in California?
Right. Well, Nevada was the first Western contest, so it was billed as the test of whether or not a candidate could win a Western state, which traditionally doesn't have an early voice in the nominating season, and whether or not they could play well with labor and with a non-white population. So coming out, Hillary Clinton's going to advertise the fact that she did win a Western state, that she was able to carry the Latino vote, and that should be a leg up for her in the Western part of the country. On the other hand, Senator Obama won 11 of the state's 17 counties. He played strongly in rural Nevada, which is heavily Republican. He played strongly in northern Nevada. So he's going to come out of Nevada really pointing to that extra delegate that he was able to come away with, and also the fact that he can appeal to non-traditional Democratic areas. Senator Clinton worked really hard with the Democratic establishment. She came in early, locked up a lot of the Democratic establishment support, and Senator Obama came in and said, well, look, I can win these areas where Democrats traditionally don't play.
So he showed a breadth of appeal there in winning outside of Las Vegas, winning in more diverse parts of Nevada that may augur well for him in that aspect, Anjanette.
Right. If the case is to be made that Senator Clinton has an electability problem, you can probably see him saying, well, look, I can play well in a general election if I'm able to appeal to a broad cross-section of voters.
Mo Dennis, what lessons are you taking away from this? What are you going to say to your fellow politicians and Latinos, let's say, across the border in California, on the basis of what you saw this weekend in Nevada?
Well, I think just hammering the point of change, and more importantly, you know, who's going to be able to win in November, And I think that that's what's catching on with Obama. As we get going, people are seeing that, and they're starting to realize, well, you know, can he really, you know, is he the one that's going to be able to win in November? Or is Hillary? And I think they'll realize that he can do it and he can create the change.
Hillary Haycock, what about the labor lesson learned in Nevada, looking on down the road?
The labor lesson learned?
Yeah.
I think labor unions are we're founded on a really fundamental point, which is that, you know, stand together to get something done. And I feel like the labor unions that were able to, you know, get their members to stand together and come together behind a candidate like our union really did manage to have an impact where we could. You know, we were up in Elko, we were up in Washoe County, both of which went for Obama.
But Hillary broke through in spite of the Culinary Union's endorsement for Obama. Does that mean that these two candidates may have equal appeal in inside labor movements and that the unions aren't going to be able to direct their members to one or the other?
I think that a labor union can get through to its members if it really has the right message and if it is engaging with its members in the ways it knows how to do that best. And I think that our union did that. I'm not sure where Culinary broke down. Maybe they didn't have enough time, and maybe there was just too much, you know, outside controversy.
Yep. Hillary, with that, we're out of time for today. Hillary Haycock with the SEIU in Nevada, thank you very much for your time. And Jeanette Damon with the Reno Gazette-Journal, and Mo Dennis in Las Vegas with us today. Thanks to you all. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.